One, roll the footage. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Simon Severino, your host. And sales is tough. Sales is getting longer and longer. You used to close in two calls. Now it takes you five calls. And sometimes you think, okay, yeah, they're going to expand. They're going to renew. And then the last 5 meters, they delay. They don't renew. It's tough to be a salesperson right now. That's why I've asked Jeff Hendricks to come on the show, because he went from zero to hero in no time. And I want to unpack each single milestone from consultant to salesperson to extremely successful salesperson in a short period of time. What can we learn? What are the stages? What do people need in each stage? Welcome, Jeff.
Simon, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be with you today and excited to talk sales and all the things that I've learned over the past couple of years.
I've read the Challenger book. We've discussed it here on the show. We know the Challenger method. You just jumped into that world. Can you tell us why did you pick that world and how was it to enter that world?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the end of your question. I'll tell you, it was extremely intimidating to enter the world. And for folks who maybe, you know, hearing my story for the first time, just so that you're aware, essentially, I did a career in consulting. So I worked for companies like Deloitte, Accenture, niche consulting firms. I accidentally stumbled into that while living in Santiago, Chile. And that's how I got my start in management consulting. And about 15 years into my career, a headhunter reached out to me and said, hey, you know, would you be interested in considering something totally different? And I was like, I'm game, I'm open. And essentially what that opportunity was to join Challenger as an account executive and learn how to apply the Challenger approach from zero, from starting from scratch, having never held a bag before. So sure, I had started and helped like sold an extra project at Accenture or something like that, but I hadn't actually sat in the seat and held a bag for the first time. And so it was kind of a fun experiment, and you could call me a guinea pig, if you will.
So what was guinea pig week one?
Ooh, guinea pig week one was really tough because I didn't know anything about our products. I didn't know anything about our services. I had to learn all about our ICP, our ideal customer profile. And essentially I had to learn all the tactical approaches of selling from scratch. So What is prospecting? What is discovery? All the way through closing and running through procurement. And even at the time, we were full cycle. So I did account management, account growth as well. And so I'll tell you, it was very intimidating and full of lots of mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And mistakes, that's how we learn. So let's unpack some of the mistakes. How can we make them early in a de-risked way, right? And how can we learn from them? So what were the biggest mistakes?
Oh man, there are definitely too many to tell unless we have about 3 or 4 hours, and today we don't. So, but I'll tell you, here's some really common ones that I personally made. Like one with prospecting or something like that. When I reached out, it was all about us and what we can do. I wrote emails that were way too long. In discovery calls, I was very eager to tell people about, you know, what we did or our research and why that was relevant, rather than shifting the conversation and focusing on them. And so early on, you know, I would have calls where I had lots of notes of what I wanted to say, rather than having the optimal interactive conversation. And so those resulted in things where I thought, oh, that call went great, and then I would never hear from the prospect again. And so I think what was really interesting is once I understood the conversation needs to be centered on the customer. I need to come in with a hypothesis around what the customer's pains and challenges are. All of a sudden, they opened up to me a lot more. The conversation became much more interactive. I spoke much less about myself and much more understanding their world, saying, hey, I've seen other folks with these problems. Do these apply to you? And that just opened up a whole new world of conversation. and just created a much higher level of trust and excitement with pretty much every prospect who is open to having that conversation.
So you said many things. Let me double click into them. One is the email. Make the email short, especially the first email. I see subject lines with 6, 7, 8 words. Even the subject line, the highest open rate is a subject line with 2 words. The next open rate, 3 words. And from the 4th word on, it goes rapidly down in open rate. So try to stay below 3 words, max 3 words in a subject line. And then you said, if we start with us, right? That's an immediate showstopper. So what's a better way to start? How can we know, how can we have an assumption of what's on their minds and hearts before we ever see them?
Yeah, and this is where I think it's incredibly important if the company has the chance to take a look at your ideal customer profile and your best customers in seat today. What are the problems that you're solving for them? What are the common challenges that you're hearing over and over? Because there's some patterns there. And if you start to see the same stakeholders coming to you and speaking with you, you're gonna be able to start to identify those patterns and get ahead of them. And the other thing that I would really strongly suggest is doing some research ahead of your conversation. So if you're lucky enough to have LinkedIn Sales Navigator, they have a account IQ tool that provides you a great overview. That's an excellent place to start. If not, if they're a public company, take a look at their most recent earnings call, take a look at their annual report, take a look at their website, understand their leadership page, have a chance to take a quick look at their LinkedIn profiles and see what they're posting about. All of these pieces can make it so that you go from a cold conversation to a warm conversation very quickly. And again, you're forming a hypothesis based off the patterns that you've seen so that somebody feels like you have the credibility and the knowledge about this aspect of their business. And maybe you know a little bit more than they do and have the chance to teach them something.
And you also mentioned a great tactic, which is, I am observing, I'm in your field, I'm immersed in your world, I'm observing 1, 2, 3 that people are experiencing. So you give them the chance, right, to open up without being too obvious and too pushy.
Absolutely. And hopefully without doing the 20 questions game where it feels like, you know, the person asked for a meeting or they sat down and they agreed to a meeting and they feel like they're getting interrogated by the FBI. You know, it's like, it's not exactly the most fun experience. You want to have a give and get. And what's funny is people say, well, what if I'm wrong? And you know, what's really funny about that is even if you're slightly off, even if you're actually totally wrong, people love correcting you. And just the fact that you started with the theory gives them the chance to say, actually, yes, and, or actually, no, it's this other thing, but it feels like you made an effort. Give it a shot. I think people will be surprised at how well it works.
And you are in a conversation, and that was the goal of the whole thing.
That's the goal of the whole thing, a conversation about their businesses and their challenges.
So it's now the second week. We have made some mistakes. We're learning. Emails gets better. The talking points are better. What happened then?
Then I was chasing deals that had no chance of closing. I was not correctly identifying which of my deals were real opportunities and which were people who just for whatever reason wanted to talk to me and kept talking to me. And so this is a really common mistake that we see with all types of sellers. And so they think activity equals progress. If I have a call with somebody and they're willing to have a next call or a demo with me and then they're having a next call, then the deal is progressing and I'm doing a good job because I'm busy. However, what they're not doing is showing you the true buying signals. And a lot of times what you want to do is to be able to identify whether you have true buying signals based on the actions that your buyers take. Verifiable actions. Are they pushing back and asking challenging questions? That can feel uncomfortable. However, if you've led with some insight or something you're teaching them, they might just be pressure testing it and thinking through it. That can be a good thing. Are they bringing other relevant people into the conversation? it's rare today that a single-threaded buyer makes a purchase. They're much more likely to bring in 2, 3, 6, 8, 10 people into the conversation. It presents a challenge, but at least we have a chance to talk to them. And so the mistake I made was, oh, this person wants to keep talking to me. The deal must be progressing. I'm going to forecast it. Great. And then lo and behold, I get holding the bag, you know, 3 months, 6 months, however long your sales cycle is down the line. Whereas now I can tell you there are clear profiles around who will mobilize and help you make a deal happen versus who will just talk to you or even stop a deal from happening. And correctly identifying them can greatly increase the predictability of your pipeline and your forecasting.
Oh, that's counterintuitive for many listeners probably. Hey, they keep talking to me. I'm progressing. No, they're not involving the others. So you're stalling actually here. Week 3, week 4, what happened next?
Next, it was all about preparing for those real opportunities. How do we negotiate? How do we actually get ready for a conversation where maybe they're going to ask you for a discount, or maybe they're going to ask you for some additional concessions? And I think a person's natural instinct, especially after they've built rapport, especially when maybe they're chasing some of their first deals at a new company, is to want to acquiesce, is to want to keep the relationship. Mm-hmm. However, if we cede too early, if we give in to what they're asking for without getting all the negotiables on the table, without fully understanding and getting a commitment from them that if we agree to this, then X and Y will happen, then we run the risk of making concessions only to have additional people, procurement, come in and ask for more concessions on top and put us into a tough situation. And we don't get the commitment to a close date, a kickoff date, something that's really important. This is often referred to as a mutual close plan. I actually prefer to call it a mutual kickoff plan, because the kickoff date, when you start whatever it is that you want, that's what the customer truly cares about. And so as you enter into that negotiations phase, it's really important to say, okay, I understand that this is important to you. Let me understand a little bit more about it. However, we have yet to speak about invoicing terms or these other aspects that are incredibly important. Can we make sure we do that? And when would you like to get started with this? And then work backwards from there so that when we make any concessions, we ensure that we have all that we need to close the deal and get started on time, and that we've pressure tested.
I love this. And I'm curious to hear all the milestones that came next from zero to hero in such a short time after one word from our sponsors. What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints, how they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com. Many people listening right now or watching, they go, oh, wow, that's a pretty cool progression. How often has his supervisor, sales manager sat down with him? Or was he learning things from videos and books? Or was it sitting down? How is the process of being coached in this stage?
Yeah, Simon, that is such a good question. And I really appreciate you bringing it up. Undoubtedly, the manager of a seller can make a tremendous impact on their improvement and their learning curve, especially if at a company-wide level we've agreed that we want to adopt a new approach. The manager is incredibly important. That said, you know, it's not just the manager taking it on. The individual contributor, in my opinion, also needs to be able to learn and practice in between coaching sessions. Now, a lot of managers will tell us, but I'd love to coach, but I don't have time. And what I would suggest to them is if you have a weekly one-on-one, it's not about making it all about coaching. It's about carving out, say, 15 minutes of time in your hour one-on-one. Sure, you need to cover pipeline, internal updates, all the things that you do normally, but you need to think about, great, what's coming up next week that is really important for this seller, whether it's a discovery call or whether it's a negotiation, and spending 15 minutes providing them some perspective to properly prepare and to practice that muscle, that sales skill muscle, can make all the difference. And so for me, that's what was incredibly important, is I said, oh, okay, let's see, year two, I want to get better at early stage and discovery. And so I would do preparation for my next discovery call, bring it to our one-on-one, and my manager and I would review it, run through it, you know, do you have all the questions set up? Have you created your hypothesis? Have you done this? Have you done that? Here's some suggestions. Go out and have that call and come back and say, well, this went well, but however, I ran into a problem here, and get new coaching. That takes about 15 minutes out of a one-on-one, and it can be incredibly important, but it's up to the seller to also show up with some thoughts and a desire to get better.
And is there software that can help you? So how did you answer questions that you had when nobody was available? Was it software, books, videos, just A-B testing, winging it?
Well, so I'll tell you, one thing that really made, in my particular case, I don't know if it's easier, but it made it so that we were aligned, was we both agreed that based off the research that Challenger had done, that we were going to do the training off of those concepts. Now, applying them to the real world can be challenging, and you know, it's important, but at least we knew, we had a North Star, if you will, of what the manager and I agreed that was the best practice, and we were going to try off of that. Now, are there important tech integrations that have happened since then that are important? Yes. One, if you're lucky enough to have a software recording service like Gong or Chorus, they have incredibly good information that not only comes from the recording, the transcript, seeing how the conversation flows, but also there's some new aspects that around that conversational intelligence that can be really helpful for the coaching piece of it. In our world, we actually have a special application that overlays in Salesforce that helps sellers determine whether they have the correct buyer identifiers that I mentioned, the verifiers of their action, in the correct stages of Salesforce. So it's like, has the buyer done A or B in stage three? And what that allows is for a conversation and a pressure testing of deals. And it's a binary, it's a yes or a no, and you can have that conversation. So that's also improves forecasting. So there's some of the tech pieces. And then I will say there are tons of free resources out on LinkedIn. We put out a monthly webinar that talks about how to apply the Challenger sale to every aspect of the sales cycle you can think of. And I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time reviewing that information, taking notes, and applying it in the world. And that really made a big difference.
What have you found out about talking times? Because we use a real-time software that we have built to see the 8 steps, so the milestones that we look at, and also talking time. And from what we're seeing right now, highest win rates are slightly below 30% by your talking. So 28%, 29%, 30%, that's the sweet spot. If we can stay there in terms of salesperson talking time, that's the highest win rate. What are things that you are seeing from your tools, from your insights?
So talk time is important. And what I think is really interesting is it can depend a little bit on your sales cycle and the different milestones and motions. It can be tailored. What I often see is that early stage conversations, it's much more even, or even the buyer talking more, because you can bring that hypothesis, but you need to unpack how it applies in their world. And you need to give them the time to explain to you what their status quo is, why they think what they think, how they're thinking about solving this. Then oftentimes mid-stage, when it's like, okay, we now have gotten to the point where I understand your world and I'm here to teach you something, I'm here to offer you a new perspective, then we do see the seller time go up maybe above 50%, but still keeping it interactive. You know, nobody wants a 5 or 6 minute monologue. Those 2 to 3 minute short and then asking a question are much more effective. So we see that. The other thing that's really interesting, and this is, I might be spoiling one of your later questions on this, but I'll go ahead and share it, is I was really skeptical about AI, because I think that if you think about writing outbound emails, everybody thought it was going to magically create a personalized email and just basically change how we do outbound. I think that is not the case. However, if you ask me what I'm really excited about AI, it's these verifiers that AI can pick up in a conversation. And so we've actually worked with Gong in this particular case to create specific verifiers around, did you teach somebody something new? Have you come up with a mutual close plan, a mutual kickoff plan, those types of things? And the conversation intelligence is incredibly good at picking these up. And we found that those directly correlate to win rate. And when you see them, you see 10, 15% higher win rates than when they're not present. And that tells me that the seller is executing on the skills and behaviors that are leading to higher win rates.
Yes, this is something that AI can really do. So if you give it the right milestones and the right things to look at, it can really help you in real time. Like you have a Jarvis, you are Iron Man, you're in action, and you have a Jarvis with you. I find that really, really helpful. What are things that you are seeing? So we are in the middle of your journey. You're learning, you're getting better and better, you find stuff that works. Let's finish the journey and then look at outside what's going on in the world of sales. What was the last part of the journey? How did you get to rapid success?
Yeah, so I would say that it was definitely progress. Like it wasn't overnight. And going from absolutely zero to the point where I felt comfortable was probably an 18 to 24 month journey in my particular case. I'll tell you what really started to show me, besides the results, which were trending more positively, was I had a deal that I had gotten the thumbs up. It was a large, important deal. And it was saying, we're aligned, we want to do this. However, we're on a calendar year and it was December 18th and we still hadn't got into contracting. And so it was at great risk of at worst slipping, or if you slip to the next year, potentially even slipping away. And how I realized that I'd really taken these skills and learned them is I was able to communicate to that customer the cost of inaction. If they do nothing, if they do not close that deal this year, these are the potential risks that are associated to them. The risks that are associated to their business of delaying the start. And also, of course, the risks of potential changes to program pricing, et cetera. And what that mobilized, what that motivated, was their COO to get on the phone with us on December 23rd and say, yes, we are ready to go. And we had the contract signed on December 28th. And so that told me, okay, we're really starting to understand the leverage that we have. Because some people might have said, this is such a big deal, I don't want to take any chance of creating tension because maybe I'll get it in January, whatever. And it was really those moments where I said, you know, this is a 50-50 relationship. We had already spent 3-4 months. And for whatever reason, my internal person couldn't get it moving. I needed to help them. And so providing them a reason, a consequence of not doing it, really showed me, okay, this is something where if we think strategically, if we prep, if we plan out, we can truly, truly impact how these opportunities go. And luckily have an incredible impact for that customer by getting them going and making the change they were trying to seek.
Yeah, let's double click into this, because many listeners right now go, oh my God, I would love that, to get into a situation where I feel confident enough, the relationship, the understanding, the assumptions are validated. And now I can push a little bit in terms of, you know, let's get serious here. Let's get into the next gear together. So it's a mutual commitment, right? And so many right now are listening and go, I'm there, I'm at 90%, I'm at 95%. But they push me 1 month more, 1 more month. I would love to say, guys, now it's time to get serious. I would love to get into the next gear, but how to do that in an effective way? What to look at and how to start it?
I think what's incredibly important here is to put yourself in the shoes of the buyer. And this is why the actions you take in an early stage of the deal are honestly more important than any negotiation class or negotiation tactic you'll ever take. Properly showing up with a hypothesis and helping them understand the true cost of their current situation, whether it's an inefficient process and they have to use extra resources to cover it, whether it's risk that they're not realizing, whether they're truly losing money. Those are all what we would call the cost of inaction. Those are things that the status quo are going to cost them. And if they do nothing about it, they're going to continue or potentially get worse. If we can properly identify those, co-create those with our stakeholders early on, that puts them in a scenario where if they choose to push out a month, you can say, hey, remember the costs we discussed? The pushing out a month is going to cost you this much. So let's talk about what are some of the reasons. What else is happening that cost no longer is relevant? And so it really gives you a chance to give them something about their business that's incredibly relevant to their business and have that conversation rather than, hey, let's close this because I have a monthly quota or I have a quarterly goal, because frankly, they don't care about that.
Yes, that's not a great plan. So we go back to square one. We are rooted into our assumptions, into really being intimate with their world and understanding where they are. From there, having explored together what risks and opportunities are, and at the right moment, reminding them of their own words about risks and opportunities and saying, guys, remember, this is tied to that. And this is the moment where we can go left or right, and this is the decision right now to take. Love this. So this is how you were able to be a success story. Congrats. And we don't hear many success stories in the last weeks. We hear of delays, of buyers that are cautious, and of demotivated teams. So it's great to hear a success story during these tough weeks. What are you seeing on the client side in terms of how they onboard people and what's going on there?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're kind of, if I think about hiring and onboarding, there are two really common themes that we see sales organizations make mistakes around. Number one is your hiring profile. You should pick what approach you want to take to sales and hire accordingly. There are, you know, a lot of sales training companies, but there are truly, if you boil it down to it, there are three ways to sell. There's either you speak about your products and services, which is the original way that we've now found to tend to commoditize us. There's what you might call solution selling or consultative selling, which is I'm going to show up with a series of questions and then do my best to custom fit what the buyer tells me that they want into my solution. And then there's insight selling, which is essentially, I'm going to show up with a hypothesis. Pick which of those three you would like to be, because those are key seller profiles and things that you can verify before you hire them. There are tools and resources out there that can help. If people have curiosity of how to do that, they can reach out to me. But it's really important that you hire to the closest to the profile of how you would like them to sell. So you start on, to use an American term, first base, second base, or third base, you know, in baseball, if you will. I'm a huge fan of European football, soccer to us, and I can't think of how I would make that analogy work. It's like you start on the penalty spot instead of the halfway line, but it doesn't work quite as well. And then when it comes to onboarding, I think the most common mistake we see is people spend all their onboarding time in, this is our product, this is our service, these are maybe our differentiators if you're lucky. I would flip that script. This is our customer. This is our ideal customer profile. And these are the top three pain points that this customer has. this is how we solve for those, but get deep on the problem. Because if we can have that conversation and they feel like we understand their problems as well or better than they do, then all of a sudden your solution, you're going to have so much credibility that they almost believe your solution is going to solve it because you're able to speak so eloquently about the problems they speak. So that's a big error we see in onboarding, is too much, you know, navel gazing or too much about us and not enough about who am I speaking to and what do they care about.
What are your favorite marketing and sales podcasts?
Oh, that's a great question. So I have so many that it's difficult. I will say, aside from the one that we're on right now, big fan, I love Nudge. Nudge is Phil Agnew, and it's on the HubSpot network. And he provides a weekly podcast around, you know, top psychological approaches to marketing, but they apply to sales and they apply to outbound incredibly well. And it's super well done. I'm a huge fan of that podcast. Gosh, there are so many. I'll give a shout out. 30 Minutes to President's Club is a great podcast. They've got a lot of fantastic guests and tactical approaches. And if you really want to get better at outbound, the Jason Bay has one called the Outbound Squad that has really good tactical tips, especially for smaller businesses. And I'll tell you, Challenger also has a podcast. It's currently, the new episodes are on pause right now, but the back catalog is incredibly rich, and it's got so many great suggestions on all types of different pieces that are still relevant today.
Super cool. Where can people be part of your journey? Where should they find you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn's always the best. I'm always happy to engage with folks and connect with folks on LinkedIn. From there, I usually, if I'm doing webinars or podcasts or things like that, I'll usually cross post them to LinkedIn. And I also try to share my learnings and journeys across, you know, medium form and short form posts on LinkedIn.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for being on the show. Jeff Hendricks, everybody, and see you soon.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.
What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com.